You are listening to Fast Growth Funding, the podcast all about helping you demystify the world of AI investments. Sponsored by EAG Ventures, where entrepreneurs help entrepreneurs. This show is all about helping give as much value as possible to investors and entrepreneurs alike. So if you like what you hear, please do subscribe to the show and share this episode with your network to help us reach more people just like you. Thanks again. I mean, season one of the podcast was very much about helping entrepreneurs get to that phase of fast growth. So the show itself was called Fast Growth Stories, talking about how entrepreneurs can build their businesses, get set up for due diligence, all the things that they need to do in order to get to that fast growth phase. We're kind of taking a little bit of a different turn here with season two of the show and calling it Fast Growth Funding to match up with these goals, right? To match up with the idea that, you know, we are building a fund now. There is an opportunity now to help not just entrepreneurs get ready for investment, but to also demystify the world of AI investment in itself and to help investors kind of paint a very clear roadmap as to what needs to happen in order for them to find and vet the right companies to back, but also to kind of give them a clear, simplified version of what can be quite a complicated and messy world of AI investment. Neil, do you want to just talk us a little bit about why we're focusing so much on AI and why we're so passionate about AI growth and AI-driven businesses?
Yeah, thanks, Ivan. Well, listen, I don't think, unless someone's been living in a cave for the last 3 months in particular, most people will have noticed a lot of hype, not sure it's the right word, hype in inverted commas, and a lot of discussion, theorizing around the future of AI, which has come out of, you know, Bletchley Park, you know, people playing around with ChatGPT and Bard themselves. It's a really exciting time to be both an AI entrepreneur and an investor in the space, because I think we're all quite clear that this is here to stay. It's not a fad. It's going to have a massive impact on lives, on businesses, and new business models. So I think it also requires a bit of circumspection, actually, in terms of backing the right AI winners. When we've got any new technical phase or opportunity, there's a lot of excitement, and there's probably a lot of overvaluation. And one of the benefits of our fund is going to be marrying the ability to have quite a narrow focus on AI applications within traditional businesses, rather than just pure play AI. If you marry that with the technical DD and software development company, which we have within the group, Startup Factory, which Guy mentioned, plus our operational experience, I think we've got a nice package there to be able to provide, you know, quite a reasonable and pragmatic assessment of how we identify those AI winners. So I think broadly, we're very excited about the technology. We're very excited about the data intensive industries that AI technology can provide real value to: education, healthcare, manufacturing being obvious ones. Frankly, a lot of, particularly within the venture capital space, backing the right idea is often dependent on backing the right people and the visions of the entrepreneurs. AI is obviously attracting all the smart data science people, all the smart go-to-market folk. And, you know, frankly, I think we all want to work within marketplaces whereby we're surrounding ourselves with the real next generation,
yeah,
of the savvy and smart entrepreneurs.
Alexa, what are your thoughts on that in terms of giving sort of new investors and founders just a very simple guidelines as to what they need to be looking for, you know, when it comes to AI, that whether it's going to reinvent the wheel or just follow an industry or a process that's already kind of proven?
Yeah, but I mean, the first thing I would say for investors is to, you know, use their own knowledge and what they know, really, and look at the business model first and make sure they're comfortable with that. So, you know, I would suggest not going after the fear of missing out. Let's do any AI. I don't understand what the business is. That would be my first advice. Then the second one is then looking at the technology. It would be good for investors to understand the company they're looking at, which side of the AI that is it sitting on? Is it on the applied AI where you can use some kind of, you know, off the shelf or solutions to take advantage of the particular business model by applying AI, or building that capability straight away for you know, real innovation, which probably has a bit of bigger barrier to entry and it's more understanding, but it probably, you know, have a better potential in the long run, probably is a bit of a longer play as well. Or is it somewhere in between? Like we said before, it would be good to look at businesses who can start using AI off-the-shelf AI from an applied side straight away, and then look how to build that capability themselves. And then after that is understanding of the tech, and this is why, you know, technology is, you know, can be a black box. I don't think it's a rocket science. I think a lot of people can understand it a bit more, and this is where the Starter Factory help in terms of the due diligence in looking at the aspects of the technology, you know, like we mentioned, engineering practices and the kind of the secret sauce, the tech strategy, the team leadership, but also people and the product roadmap. So how we can actually get from where we are to where we want to be. Because I think what investors need to know is that AI is a fast-moving space. The technology is a fast-moving space anyway, and there's, you know, you have to keep continue innovating. But what you want, need to know is whether the business you're investing is runs on a scalable base that will allow for that rapid growth without requiring what I would say unaccounted investment. So I think we all know investment needs to come, but you need to know that you have the right secret sauce plus right process in place so you can actually deliver on that going forward. And this is what the technical due diligence will highlight. And, you know, you don't expect, I don't know everything. I mean, I know very, very little about few things in technology, for example. So, you know, I don't expect everybody should know everything, but I think kind of collaborating this way, investors know the business, the Starter Factory knows the tech, we can help out, make informed decisions.
So what exactly is an investor ecosystem?
I guess from my perspective, what guys just talked about, actually, with the platform sums it up quite well. So we had a first-time founder looking to build a business with an investor ecosystem. It brings together genuine investors, people who are in the investment and high growth sector to work together and genuinely collaborate. So that means that if you look at a lot of things that happened formally, you've got accelerators, incubators, they very much focus around a program that gets you investment. No one sets up a business to raise money. They set up a business to grow, and money is a function of growth. So if you bring together people who genuinely work within this arena, genuinely understand it, all with a shared vision and a shared goal. So that could be angel investors or individual investors, family offices, venture capital companies, private equity, etc. And they're collaborating and sharing information. They can share knowledge. They can share deal flow. They can work out how do you value a company. Things are moving ridiculously quickly at the moment in both directions. So how do you balance a true and fair valuation? You've got more understanding of how everybody along the supply chain works. So if you're an individual investor, you're raising individual investment and don't understand what the next level of investors are going to be looking for you in business, you could go off in the wrong direction. So by bringing all of that together, you get a better understanding and also get better support within your organization. So that's how I define it. It's a group of active individuals or organizations who are within the sector collaborating together to a shared goal.
It's a great topic. I think one of the key points is that entrepreneurs themselves are very hands-on sort of people, and they can make very difficult investors for that reason. You have to sort of re-educate your own mindset of being more hands-off and responding when you're asked rather than diving in, if you like. So it's quite a different mindset. And one of the things that I've certainly found, I know Guy has as well because I've talked to him about it, is the decision-making of an entrepreneur is quite quick. They like the concept or the idea. They'll put their money behind it because they believe in it. Whereas a professional investor, a VC as you call it, and other guys, is they will be a bit more measured and balanced, and the decision making is a lot longer. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And you kind of need that balance in the marketplace, to be honest, because what tends to happen from what I've seen since I've kind of moved into this world is that, just as Gary said, the entrepreneur, because they go by the gut a little bit more than they do the data. There's always some data involved, don't get me wrong. But there's a far more gut involved, and they make far quicker decisions. So what that lends itself to is probably sort of the seed and the seed plus investment will often come from successful entrepreneurs, angels, who are often successful entrepreneurs, because it's a smaller sum of money, usually, and you kind of make a quicker decision. But you also realize that there are bigger risks. But that kind of, you know, resonates with entrepreneurs. They know business is all about risk. And what they're looking for is value for money. And if they think they can invest earlier and get a better valuation, they're prepared to do that. I think the institutional investors are quite happy to pay more money for more certainty further down the line. I think that's the biggest difference.
Yeah,
interesting. Thank you, Keegan. It's probably the story of so many startups. You know, it just started off as a simple thing and it grew into something completely unexpected.
I have a cool story about this that I'll just give really quick. And that's that I was in Miami this last week where we have our annual holiday party in Miami. And I had the good fortune of bumping into Jeff Bezos while doing one of my morning workouts at the hotel gym, and was actually introduced to him by someone that's been asking me for a job. He's someone that's always kind of been an inspiration, that's grown something from small days in a garage, right? We've all seen the pictures with him in the garage with, you know, Amazon written on the wall. And so he was very curious to hear about our firm and all the things that we've accomplished from those very early days too. And it's also clear his excitement and empathy for the challenges that high growth startups can have too. So, you know, it's a fun little thing that happened last week. Yeah. Just a few days last Friday, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to hear that excitement never kind of dies, even with someone like Bezos. Still got it inside him.
Yeah, and to his credit too, you know, this is someone that is one of the wealthiest men in the world, and he was very gracious and had a lot of thoughtful questions. And I think it was just a reminder as leaders of companies and folks working with companies to put our best foot forward, and we can get a lot done that way.
Yeah, good stuff. Let's just move in now to talking about, you know, IP. Obviously, you know, Keegan, there's probably no one better suited to talk about this subject than yourself, especially from a tech startup standpoint. But let's just jump into it, because, you know, I think for a lot of people, maybe myself included, when I think about IP, you think about something that comes maybe quite late in a company's, you know, journey, where when they need to get bigger and bigger, the size kind of dictates the importance at which IP needs to come into the picture. Do you want to just explain why this is something that's so overlooked in the early stages of a tech startup?
I think that it can be something that's often overlooked. And I would say that the biggest reason that this is overlooked is because startups generally have a finite amount of money, and they need to spend about five times that amount of money in order to accomplish what it is that they'd like to do, right? They're like, well, we've got £5, but we need to spend 50 in order to accomplish what we need. And so how do we figure out on that budget what is the most important and what is not? And there's a lot of data that supports today, not just data that I've generated, but data by outside sources that supports how much more value there is for startups and later growth stage companies that have IP than those that don't. And I'll rifle through some of those statistics later on in the interview today. So it's overlooked for financial reasons, I think, is part of it. Another part of this question is there are certain technology areas that haven't traditionally been areas where people would pursue intellectual property, but that have in recent years, it's become more and more important for folks to pursue in some of these areas that were less intuitive to pursue patents in particular.
What are some things that are kind of crucial, like mission critical with a brand at that stage that's going to engage an investor rather than just distract them or, you know, be the fancy kind of fluffy bits?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So what we see a lot of are decks and sort of startup presentations that are telling the story from the mind and the vision of the founders. Now, most of the time, those founders will have a relevant experience or relevant background in the sector they are trying to move into or disrupt. That's not exclusive. Sometimes we have founders that have an idea in a sector or category that's completely different to what their background is. And actually, a lot of the time, we've seen this more in the last 18, 24 months than we have in previous 6 years. We're getting founders coming into us with no experience at all. They're graduates and they've seen an idea. And because of all the tools available now, they can, you know, you can build something from the ground up with little or no sector experience if you have a strong enough idea. What we see, again, 99% of the time, is a story told from the mind of a founder. Whilst that's great, and that's obviously where you have to start, what that isn't is what they are trying to do for their target customers. So the first thing we do is take them through an exercise. We call it what, why, how. It's helping founders understand what it is their business is trying to do, why their business exists, what is their reason for being or their purpose, which is a word that gets used a lot, and then how they want to deliver that business out to the world. It covers off sort of all of the main fundamental points of what we call a brand strategy or a strategic platform. Answering those questions and asking those questions of founders is one of the most fascinating and rewarding experiences. We've built tools and methodologies to kind of get everything out of the heads of the founders that we need. The what, why, how sounds simple, and in theory it is simple, but obviously there are tricks and tools we use to get all the information we need from them. We have never in 8 years done one of those and got the same answer twice. It's fascinating when you actually break this down and encourage founders to think about what it is they're putting together. You see these beautiful moments where they realize that they're saying the same thing, but actually in a very, very different way. So alignment of those founders and getting those founders to pick apart what it is they're trying to build and trying to create and putting it back together again in a way that is completely off the same page and sort of from the same perspective is a huge part of what we do. That process in itself gives them much more of a chance of landing this with an investor because they've been through a process using, all we're doing is looking at it from a sort of the brand lens, if you like, the brand perspective. And we're looking at what they're trying to do and saying, okay, guys, but why is this relevant? Why is this relevant to your audiences? Why is it relevant to an investor? Why is this going to disrupt in a particular market? And it's just the way we think about it is totally different to how founders would have thought about it up to that point.
Yeah.
The common denominator in, I would say, probably 80% of the companies that we deal with is the lack of a credible marketing plan. People really don't understand how to do that properly. And, you know, they say, well, you know, we're going to disseminate all the content that we're going to produce over social media. But what does that mean? How do you do it? You know, how do you turn the interest that you may generate from that content into leads? And, you know, have you got a plan as to then how to really get into those leads and work out which ones are the credible ones and really work hard on getting those over the line? So that's the biggest problem we face, I think, as investors, is people have great ideas, quite often great products, great services, but really fall short from a marketing and sales perspective.
Yeah, I think when it comes to B2B specifically, but this does apply to B2C as well, is so many businesses out there are scared to show up in a fun, engaging and human way for some reason. They're doing the old school. They're following what they've done for years. And the big companies, and no offense to some of my clients, I'm really pushing them to do it differently. And I do work with some big clients and, you know, they're doing it now. We've got some, you know, they're seeing it, me do it for myself and for my business. And they're like, we want some of that. So I think what larger B2B businesses do is, you know, rely on a long form report. They produce this really big, hefty content that takes quite a long time for people to digest. And we're living in a TikTok generation. None of us have got time. We're all too busy. I interview a lot of CMOs, heads of digital, you know, CTOs, CIOs on my podcast about how they want to be informed, how they want that thought leadership to be delivered for them. And it needs to be quick, punchy, human. Businesses communicate to businesses for some reason, like it's a computer to computer situation, showing up like a business in this really boring tone with this really long, hard to understand content sometimes. It needs to be short. It needs to be human. It needs to be cool. It needs to be funny. It needs to be, you know, you need to show up like a real person, a bit like we're doing on this podcast. And I think it's the opportunity for the smaller up and coming, you know, tech companies, startups to actually show up in a much more fun, engaging way because they've got the agility, they've got the bravery, they're able to do it. Whereas a lot of these bigger businesses, it's taking them too long to make that change. So I do first up want to say, I think if you understand how to show up in a more human, engaging, fun, exciting way, first up, that is going to massively help you.
As a final word, what do you think the best way for sort of high net worth individuals or potential investors, how should they think about AI startups or AI right now when it comes to building like a long-term wealth strategy, do you think?
Well, I think if you're looking at a long-term wealth strategy, I think the important thing is to look at the whole financial picture. And therefore, you need to look at the more boring side of the investment side of things, which is obviously where people like myself as our IFAs are involved. But obviously, in order to invest in EHE, you need to be someone who is either a sophisticated or a high net worth investor. And therefore, hopefully what you will have is the basics sorted out, which is where we come in. And at that point, you're then looking to do something above and beyond that. And that's obviously where EHE come in.
Thanks again for listening to Fast Growth Funding. Don't forget to subscribe for instant access to new episodes and follow EHE Ventures on LinkedIn for regular insights and updates on the world of AI investments. If you are interested in learning more about EHE Ventures or the AI Early Stage Growth Fund, then let's chat. Just click the link in the show notes below, head over to our landing page, register interest, and we will spark up a whole conversation with you. Speak soon.